So today is Palm Sunday, the day that according to tradition, Jesus entered Jerusalem to teach and to heal and to celebrate the Feast of the Passover. I'm going to share a somewhat shortened version of the story as it shows up in the Gospel of John. It's interesting, in the Gospel of John, this is a very big story. Everyone knows who Jesus is. Everyone wants to see him. This is clearly written from a symbolic standpoint, since all the Gospels, including John, acknowledge the fact that Judas had to point out who this unknown person was so he could be arrested. But in Bible teachings and in the writings of this era, the way to make it a point that something is important or significant is to enlarge or amplify it. So you'll hear some of that. Now the Jewish Passover was near, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover in order to purify themselves. They were looking for Jesus and were asking one another as they stood in the temple, "What do you think? Surely he will not come to the festival, will he?" A little later goes on to say, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, to the home of Lazarus, whom he'd raised from the dead. There they gave a dinner for him. Martha served, of course. Lazarus was one of those at the table with him. And Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard and anointed Jesus' feet and wiped them with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. When the great crowd of Jews learned that he was there, they came, not only because of Jesus, but also to see Lazarus, whom he'd raised from the dead. Goes on to say, the next day, the great crowd that had come to the festival heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. So they took branches of palm trees and went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord, the King of Israel." And Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it. As it is written, "Do not be afraid, daughter of Zion. Look, your king is coming, seated on a donkey's colt." It's a big story. It's a big story because what Jesus taught and what he demonstrated was a big teaching. And that is the way you convey it, at least in that tradition. The reading opens up with many people coming to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves, to prepare themselves for this spiritual experience that is about to happen, this spiritual celebration. And along the way, as Jesus stops at the home of Lazarus, Mary helps purify him by washing his feet with his pure perfume. Pure perfume. The house is filled with the fragrance of it. Filled with the fragrance. Metaphysically, we might understand that is what happens when we are cleansed of all the other things and we are literally filled with the fragrance, the aroma of that Spirit. Purification, preparation, releasing of the old, these are the things that are required to move into some new experience of our relationship to God, of our relationship to ourselves. But interestingly, the crowds in this story, they're all interested in the outside things. The crowds are the part in us, all those thoughts in us that are interested in what's going on in the outside world. They want to see this person they heard about. They want to see the guy that was raised from the dead. These are the things they're focused on, which are significant things, but they're not the point of the whole Easter or Passover experience. That's an inward thing. That's an inward thing. This part of the Easter story concludes with Jesus entering Jerusalem peacefully, yet with authority and power. He enters riding on a donkey, which, as I say every year, symbolizes having that Christ thinking, the Christ mind, the higher mind, sitting on top of the animal mind. That's true for us, not just for him. And as that happens, we can begin to move into Jerusalem, which means that place of peace, that place of dwelling in peace, where the higher consciousness, the Christ mind, is directing the animal or habitual impulses. I titled today's talk, Walking with Peace and Power. And I think as we progress forward, in our spiritual work, we will each come to understand that peace and power, true peace and spiritual empowerment, can coexist. They're not mutually exclusive. Back in Isaiah, Isaiah offers a vision early on in his writings of peace and power coexisting. And he uses these symbols. He says, the wolf will live with the lambs. The leopard lie down with the young goats. The fatted calf and the lion together. Little children shall lead them. The cow and the bear will graze and their young will lie down together. And the lion will eat straw with the ox. Peace, force, power, coexisting mutually, not exclusive. Now that's an interesting image because at the level of human experience, we tend to think of peace as something that is maintained by power. You can have peace if you have enough power. However, in the world, the way we maintain peace, the power we use it to maintain peace, is generally not very peaceful. We use police forces and militaries. We count on these things to maintain a level of peace. The people of Jesus' time would have understood that perfectly. They lived in occupied Judea. Much more occupied than what people deal with in the Middle East right now. They lived under Roman peace. Roman peace, very famous. The Romans were very good at keeping peace. Anyone that wasn't peaceful, they executed. Anyone that threatened to stir up trouble, they executed. Which is probably actually why Jesus was crucified at Easter. Not for his religious teachings, as some of the Gospels might indicate, but because he was, in the eyes of the Roman authorities, a potential disturbance to the peace. But, if we use fear-based power to create peace, have we really created peace? Or have we simply become immobilized by fear? Think about that. If it is fear-based power that we're using to generate our peace, have we really created peace? Or have we simply created something that immobilizes us because we are afraid of it? And if we're immobilized by fear, what's the chance that we're actually going to be able to connect with Spirit, with God, with the Divine, or even with real peace? Fear, masquerading as peace, can never bring peace. Fear masquerading as peace is guaranteed to block our experience of what we're actually looking for. And actually opening to that divine, opening to that presence, is the only way I know to begin to move in the direction of some type of lasting peace. So spiritually speaking, our challenge is to find ways to individually and collectively walk through this world, these appearances that are around us, with peaceful power. Which is, I think, what we saw Jesus doing, walking, going into the city of Jerusalem. And of course, that requires an inward shift in how we think about things and how we approach our world and ourselves. And it invites a deeper awareness, moving into a deeper awareness. In A Course in Miracles, Jesus makes this comment that I thought was helpful. He says, I have correctly been referred to as the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. But those who represent the Lamb as bloodstained don't understand the meaning of the symbol. Correctly understood, it's a very simple symbol that speaks of my innocence. The lion and the lamb laying down together symbolize that strength and innocence are not in conflict, but live naturally in peace. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, is another way of saying the same thing. A pure mind knows the truth, and that is its strength. It does not confuse destruction with innocence, because it associates innocence with strength. Not weakness. Can you envision Jesus as someone who was, is, innocent, peaceful? peaceful and spiritually empowered. Can you envision that for Jesus? Innocent, peaceful, spiritually empowered. Hope you can. The question then comes is, can you envision yourself innocent, peaceful, spiritually empowered? Because we all have that same capacity. If for some reason some of that is hard for you to envision for yourself, you might consider what thoughts you're holding in your own head that keep you from being able to see yourself that way. Because I'm sure that's the way our Creator sees us. Innocent, peaceful, spiritually empowered. So part of our Easter purification is noticing and releasing those thoughts that block our awareness of what's true, of innocence and peace and spiritual power. As a psychology student years ago, I was made aware of a book. Someone mentioned, said it was actually one of their favorite books in the early service. The title of the book is great, though. It's called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. The author is a gentleman named Oliver Sacks. I think he teaches down in the city. He's a neurologist and he's a psychiatrist. And he works with people with severe perceptual disorders. Obviously. Severe perceptual disorders. And the title of the book comes from a patient of his, a client of his, who when asked what was in the chair beside him, replied, "My hat." Of course, what was in the chair beside him was his wife. Hopefully she was used to it and not offended. Even when nudged, he was not able, because of his perceptual problems, to identify her. In A Course in Miracles, Jesus says we have the same problem going on with us. Our basic problem is that we have mistaken these bodies for ourselves. We have mistaken these bodies for ourselves. It'd be sort of like me mistaking my suit for myself. I'd be in trouble if I took it off, wouldn't I? Oh my gosh! We believe that we're bodies, and we believe that bodies are temporary, so we really got to defend them and protect them and take care of them. So we do. We buy all kinds of clothes for them, and we build houses or find apartments, and we work to keep other people at a distance from our body, except for a few that we're willing to allow in. We work to keep people at a distance from our body. In fact, we have wars where we destroy other bodies in order to protect our bodies. Spiritually speaking, this is nuts. Right? And humanly speaking, practically speaking, what it does is it fogs our minds. Really confuses us, this identifying this as me. And while there's nothing wrong with having a body, there's nothing wrong with enjoying the experience of being in a body and experiencing the world and others around us, if we begin to confuse our timeless self with our body, we've set ourselves up for some real difficulties. I believe that a core piece of Jesus' teaching at Easter was that he was much more than just a body. And that the apparent death of his body could in no way harm or limit him. It's emphasized in part during the Easter story when he refuses to defend himself when he is accused. It's emphasized afterwards as followers and others experience him still present, even after the death of his body. They even experience him in a body after the death of his body. Clearly the body that died was not him. The challenge for us is to realize that we're much more than just bodies. The creation is much more than just what we seem to see around us from our current level of perceptual confusion. One of the things that often helps is we'll read about the spiritual experiences of others, or maybe someone will share one of their stories of how they have bumped into some part of this greater reality that's right here in front of us, but presently being overlooked. thought it was interesting that in the last 2 weeks, two friends have shared experiences of where that greater reality showed up for them when they weren't even expecting it. One had what I would have to call a expanded vision of herself, briefly, in a meditative type program. An expanded vision of herself, where she saw herself in relationship to her whole world and everything she was doing, and saw how it was all one thing and where she fit. Quite an interesting experience as she described it. Another friend was sharing that recently, as a tourist visiting a sacred site, actually in Jerusalem, he had an experience of just having this immense energy move through his physical body, totally unexpectedly. Neither of them was trying to make the experience happen. Both of them, though, had been doing preparation. I mean, both of them had been moving for spiritual opening, so things were happening. Now, neither experience answered all their questions about spirituality and God and all that. But both experiences helped them open up to the fact that it's a fact that there's a whole lot more going on here, a much greater reality than what we're typically seeing within ourselves and within our world. Unfortunately, for those of you who have had moments like that, and those of us that have, moments of spiritual awareness do not equal spiritual mastery. Moments of awareness don't equal spiritual mastery, but they are little wake-up calls. They are little reminders that there is something greater to experience. And once we have the awareness that there's something there, we can actually devote some energy to noticing it, to looking for it, to exploring it, to inviting us in. We can begin doing things like preparing ourselves, like releasing thoughts and things that keep us in that sense of powerlessness and disconnect. We can begin to loosen our grip on our current ideas about what we think about things like innocence and peace and power. Because as we let go of those, what's actually true can begin to show up all by itself. All by itself. The human, animal-based part of us thinks that in order to be really safe, it needs to be in charge. Unfortunately, that part also contains the seeds of fear and doubt and probably death. That's why when Jesus enters Jerusalem, when he moves into that state, that place of deep and profound spiritual peace, he's on top of the donkey, not the other way around. So, as John tells us, as the Jewish Passover was near, many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to prepare themselves, to purify themselves, to get ready for this experience. As the Course in Miracles reminds us, the lion and the lamb lying down together symbolize that strength and innocence are not in conflict, but naturally live together in peace. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, is another way of saying the same thing. Think of that. A pure mind knows the truth, and this is its strength. It does not confuse destruction with innocence, because it associates innocence with strength, not with weakness. So I put a little affirmation in the back of the bulletin. I'm going to share it here with you. The one on the wall is going to be a tiny bit different because, of course, it grew over the week. Things like that happen. The affirmation for the week is, I walk through my life in perfect innocence, empowered by the peace of God. Let's share that together. I walk through my life in perfect innocence, empowered by the peace of God. And again, I walk through my life in perfect innocence, empowered by the peace of God. One more time. I walk through my life in perfect innocence, empowered by the peace of God. Close your eyes and let that settle in for a second. Imagine you, from this moment forward, walking through your life, through Sunday afternoon, through Monday morning, walking through your times at work, your times with family, your times in the community, in perfect innocence, at peace with all things and empowered by the peace of God, empowered by that divine peace, that peace that is greater than anything that seems to be around us in the world. Innocence and peace as powerful divine tools for moving through our life. Tools for keeping us safe because we're relying on innocence and peace, not force, not anger. And a mind at peace is a truly powerful tool. Powerful thing. Truly powerful thing. So I invite you just to feel that innocence, to feel that peace, to feel that perfection that is present in you, and to know that that is the true power. That is the power that was given you. And that as we release the other thoughts, as we purify ourselves by releasing the other thoughts and the other beliefs, we have that pure power of innocence and spiritual empowerment that assures our safety and our gentle travel through our life. So let's come back to our affirmation again. And together we say, I walk through my life in perfect innocence, empowered by the peace of God. And one last time, I walk through my life in perfect innocence, empowered by the peace of God. And so it is. Amen.